Last week, we had the precept ceremony. And in the middle of it, in the middle of being preceptor with Joko, I was freshly struck by an embedded symbol, a symbol of a crucial part of Zen. And as Zen is pretty concrete sort of thing, so it's even the symbols, everything takes a form. It's not an abstract symbol. But it's the power. Ritual itself is like that. It's not so much a symbolic thing as an enactment. It's a drama each time. It gives shape and sound and motion and voice to principles. So to begin, when we began the ceremony, Joko and I opened the sacred landscape by purifying the assembly with the water of wisdom, and then mostly by invoking the Buddhas and ancestors, first ourselves and then with the group, reminding us that we're not alone. We have predecessors who refined and carried the Dharma forward up to now. So that sort of lays out the terrain in a way. Next, the precept group received their rakasus, which is the for those who don't know, TJ is the little blue sort of bib-like robe that is a miniature version of this robe, the okesa, which is the original robe of, in a different form, every Buddhist ordained person, monk, nun, priest, Theravadin, Tibetan, Zen, we all have this, basically the same robe. And in Zen, we also have this small one that lay people sew, and I wear them. Priests also wear them. At any rate, at the very beginning of the ceremony, the group receives their Buddha robes and puts them on. And as the verse says, wrapping themselves in the Buddha's teaching. And this happens first. And only then did we take up the practices of clarifying and avowing our errors, our karmic blunders of our lives, and receiving and affirming the practices. So we wrapped ourselves in the Buddha's teaching first, and then we took up practices. And that was what was really wondrous to me. This wrapping the Dharma around us, and the Buddha way is opened, the Dharma is offered, and we take it up, we enfold ourselves in the Dharma that is already here. See, we don't create it, we don't go out and get it. We wrap ourselves in the teachings and the principles and the universe that is already here, that we are already in. We do that in morning zazen every morning. You put on your rocks or okesa before you take up your practices of zazen and service, perhaps. So first we find ourselves already in the Buddha way. Already standing on Dharma ground, already enfolded in the teachings. And then we take up our practice on that basis. Now, in most religious and spiritual traditions, and in most of our own minds, first you engage in practices of repentance or forgiveness or many bows or accumulating merit or doing something that's somehow preparatory, or you do practices by which you earn the right to, or you develop the ability to, or then the door is open to. So you have to do your practice first in order to somehow become worthy, I guess. That's the basic sense of a lot of that. That's the way our mind works. I'm pretty unworthy. I better do something to become worthy of this fine principle or teaching or faith. And then when you've done these practices you're in some sense then in a position to receive the blessing or the balm of that teaching or religion or God or some form of benefaction. And in Zen, it is not the case that first you practice zazen and precepts as a deluded person, and then gradually become good enough or awake enough to receive benefits. That's not how it is in Zen. In Zen, it is fundamental that from the very beginning, you're standing on Dharma ground, and embedded in the entire universe from the very beginning. Already, before you take up the first practice, before you even know about it, or Katagiri used to say, before you poke your head in it, you're already a unique and perfect expression of the universe, of, as we call it, of Buddha nature. And we practice on this basis. Now, I suppose you could say, oh, okay, here I am in this gorgeous landscape, I'm going to go take a nap. But here you are in this, you're transported to a beautiful cloud jungle, and you can either take a nap there, or you can say, I want to go out and explore it. I want to meet it. I want to appreciate it. I want to interact with it. I want to be moved and changed by it. You're already there, but what you do about being there does matter a great deal. But what is most important is that we practice on the basis of already existing Buddha nature, already being in the world of complete universe we call the Dharma world. Doesn't seem like that. Because we experience ourselves as deluded creatures. And this is not a mistake. We experience ourselves as deluded creatures. We are indeed confused, and we are indeed anguished. And this confusion and this anguish are real experiences. The language of Buddhism has been very confusing, both over time and in translation, as to what we mean by illusory. Suffering, anguish, confusion are very real. They also change. They do not have one particular form. At any rate, they're real experiences coming from events that have been visited upon us throughout our lives, and the confused lessons we took from what happened. All of this is our world of confusion and pain. And it's sadly these painful, clouded states are so powerful that they can replicate themselves. And they give rise, thus giving rise to more confusion and more suffering. These states are real within the world of body-mind, the world of the six senses, including the conscious mind. And this is, the world of body-mind is me. I'm an expression of the Dharma, and I'm all this confusion in all of my senses simultaneously. And the Buddha said at the very outset, oh, I don't know if I want to get up off my seat here under the Bodhi tree where everything is clear and quiet and go out into the world and teach, because this is a difficult teaching. It's difficult to understand because it goes contrary to where we have developed our minds with our analytical and reductive paths. And then he was persuaded, apparently by the Hindu gods coming down from the heavens, to go forth and teach. What we fail to recognize when we live caught up in this very vivid world of our senses, of our body-mind senses, is that this world of our body-mind senses, our subjective experiential world, is not the whole of the world. It's not the whole of our subjective world. And it need not be the whole of our experience. Because our experience of what is going on is not the whole of ourself. But we usually assume it is. We are at all times living in the whole universe. But we're only aware of, generally speaking, of some small, so-called discrete, finite bit of life of the universe. And that is so vivid and so complete an experience that we generally have no awareness of there being anything else beyond that. But we are at all times living in the entire universe where all the difficult events, all the illness, all the death, all the changes are moving and impermanent expressions among many others. It's natural and inescapable that we can only experience so much at a time, and that what we experience is what seems real, most real and only real. That's a natural product of our mind, but when we believe the universe is like that, that's called delusion. That's what's illusory. It's our view of what I experience and how I experience is what there is. That understanding the view that that's how it is, what it is, that's what's illusory. Suffering isn't illusory. The universe isn't illusory. You're not illusory. You're changing. We're not what we think we are, so we speak of things like illusory. At the very moment that we're confused and maybe feel threatened or upset or just narrowly focused on trudging through the day, at all times, at all of those moments, we're living in the entire universe. We're living in the world. We're living in the Buddha world. We're living in the Dharma world. And we're just not aware of it. We're not experiencing it. So we're not living in those terms. We live as though what I can see is what there is. That as though is really, really important and is an entry point for us to seeing the difference between how we think it is and how else it might be. It's one of the saddest things about human lives is that we mostly don't know that while we are living in a small and often painful but not always vivid world of experience, that that is part of or an expression of a vast universe that is all we are already part of. We're not in fact just living in the universe. We're the universe happening. It isn't happening somewhere else. We are the universe happening. That we often mostly don't know this, an active knowing that affects the way we experience. And we find it hard to open ourselves to this flowing universe as it is, because we are so committed and constrained by the views we live with, even though they're often very painful views. And yet, we live constrained by them. Hard for us to open our mind, heart, body to wider than the constricted view we've had, even though that opening brings balm and ease and peace, because when we know ourselves to be more than that narrow, constricted view, what could be better than that? Doesn't eliminate the suffering, but that it isn't all there is. And we can go from having some sense of living in a larger realm than we usually know to living in terms of that. But how do we do that? What kind of knowing is needed for us to learn to trust, to learn to open our hearts and minds? Because we mistakenly think that because we don't directly experience the depth of our life isn't deep. We mistakenly think that because we can't say, I am awake, or I am enlightened, that we are only deluded beings trying to improve a little bit. We have a very mistaken idea about what knowing is. So the precept ceremony shows us a different approach. It says, because we are already in the Dharma world, meaning not just something outside our bodies, but we are in the Dharma world as the Dharma world happening. This is us. This is it. We are it. Because of that, we can put on rakkasus or okesas and be enfolded in the Dharma and the teachings. We can be enfolded because we are already here and the Dharma is already here. Now, of course, this doesn't require a rakkasu. This is not a secret society. we are all the Dharma world happening. But the Rakkasu just makes it more visible, more comprehensible. When you actually do something, put that Rakkasu up there, say a verse, put it on, it reminds you that you've done something that reminds you that you are more than that narrow, trudging view of just one separate being. And I, for one, need lots of reminders. So many that I made this the path of my life. Because, you see, I can't even find my way through a talk without notes. Well, how would I find my way through the day without reminders? These concrete reminders. You know? A lot of people sit zazen at home. It's that same kind of reminder. You sit down. Similarly, the cross-legged posture, it's a wonderful posture. It's an ancient yogic posture. We can talk about circulating energy. We can talk about the neurological plexus down here. It's not holy or sacred. It's easier, even though the knees hurt, in the sense that it's easier because it reminds you. It puts your body somewhere where this is what you do. And then it's easier to see that you're deluded because you're drifting off. In this position, sitting in a chair, it's just a little harder to do zazen. It isn't less good, more good. It's just a little bit more difficult. And I know because I alternate. So in the same way, the Rakkasu and the Okesa are beautiful and profound expressions, manifestations of the Buddha's teaching in which we wrap ourselves. And you don't need a Rakkasu to be wrapped in the Buddha's teaching or to know it. But it's handy. So the Rakkasu helps us out. It doesn't make us holy and spiritual. It's kind of like training wheels, in a way. Mm-hmm. And I hope I'll never give up those training wheels. I need them all my life. So this insight is here for all of us at all times. The accessing insights outside of the world with kind of the blinders, like little horses that we live in so much of the time. That's what's hard. Rakkasus, companions, sitting, a zendo, all of these things, Dharma talks, bring us back to or help us rediscover where we already are, to know it more and to know it personally. Because that's the thing with Zen and all of the Dharma. It's study is fine. We have a mind, put it to work. Study and learn. That's fine. But it's only one aspect of the self. It's one aspect of who you are. And in Zen, you want to actually do something. Sitting down and doing nothing is doing something. Putting on a Rakkasu, chanting, doing a ritual, doing some form of service, all as ways of enacting our life in a widening sphere instead of that narrowing sphere that we're prone to. When I was thinking about this, that how we are already the Dharma world happening, I thought of a friendship. You think of someone really good friend or close family member, someone with whom you have a strong bond. And when you come together, you rediscover the already existing relationship. You come together on the basis of already having a relationship. Therefore, you can come together in a new and fresh way. Because it's always a little different from how it was before. You haven't thought about that person constantly since you last saw them. They haven't disappeared from the planet while you didn't think of them. The relationship didn't disappear while it was out of your conscious mind. You can remember, put back the members, and renew the connection because it's already true. It's already existing there. When our lives, when some of us have had our lives turn upside down so severely, been shaken so severely that we can doubt that. We find ourselves in time sometimes, many of us have known this at some point or other, or even doubt that. If someone disappears, like we become like very, very little children. When someone disappears, they don't exist anymore. We don't know how to find them. Recovering some basic sense of ground in our life, we recover the fact that a relationship is still there when I'm not paying active attention to it. It's not exactly just sitting there in the same form, different events are happening, and if I just completely forget about it and dismiss it, it may become thin or it may be hard to renew. But basically, I have a really good friend. I have many really good friends here. And when I see you again, it's a little different. We both had a different life for the last days or week or two, and we may not know what has gone on in each other's lives, and it could be big. But the relationship exists, and we can meet and find the new and renewed points of connection. Sometimes there's a sense of gap. And we feel alienated or isolated because we've lost that sense of the already existing connection. So it's hard to find our way back into contact. That's human loneliness. But the relationship didn't disappear. It became latent or quiet. It went through changes during the time of non-meeting because each person went through changes. And the past meeting is some time ago and is a memory. And so how do you pick up the connection again? One of the things that some people we really try to refine and develop some skill with is how do you re-meet? How do you pick up a connection again? And whether is it one day, one week, one year, there will be a very different kind of re-meeting. How do you pick up and make a fresh contact, taking into account the whole pre-existing relationship and all that has gone on, but since the last time you saw each other. Sometimes you have to bring the gap in. I can only meet the person I haven't seen for a year, including bringing the gap with me, because that's, in all honesty, part of where I am with this person now is distant. But still, we meet, we bring that with us and meet. We don't just put it in front of us so that we can't meet. So we can rediscover a connection with another person because the relationship already exists. We are already part of the Dharma world in the same way. So what is then a good way to discover or express this Dharma nature that is we are each already the Dharma world of the universe happening. Taking it for granted doesn't bring things vividly to life from which you can extend and deepen the connection. The best way to understand your whole self as part of this whole universe is using your whole self. And that may seem silly or trite, but it's literally so. Bring your whole self to it. So since we have thinking minds, we talk, we study Dharma, we listen to talks and we read books and we discuss and we talk with teachers and we talk with our companions in the Dharma, the thinking mind is a very useful part of this. The mind is one of the aspects of this whole body self that can express our reality of being in the Dharma world. The body sits zazen. That's the simplest thing for the body itself to do as a body. We do many things with our body that are also very important. And zazen is just your body and mind doing nothing but expressing being here and now as the Dharma world. So you know, when we people talk about meditation, many different meditations as being here and now, and you can say that about Zen too, but we're saying be here and you are, and what we want to know and express or manifest is you are here and now as the Dharma world expressing itself, as Buddha nature. That's what the being here and now is about. It's not just, oh, now I'm here and now I'm gone. You're here experiencing in some way, not the way your conscious mind says, being the Dharma world happening. That's what we're doing, being here and now. When we let go of thoughts. It's not just, it's not to say thoughts are wrong or bad. It's that we believe that those thoughts are how we are and who we are and what we are. And in that sense, they obscure the larger sense of who we are. And so we kindly let go of living in terms of our thoughts so that we can experience ourselves in a larger way that includes all those poor old thoughts. The mouth and ears take part in this chanting. Japanese always say, chant with your ears, not with your mouth, so that you can be joining with others and not just, you know, I'm doing it this way. Perceiving. I was going through the traditional Buddhist aspects of the self, of the body, and the feelings, and the perceptions. Perceiving is being part of being present here and now. In this practice in Zen, we don't try to eliminate perceiving. We don't try to block out the informations of life. We may not want to be completely inundated by them either. So we keep a fairly simple perceptual universe for Zazen, because we're just kind of simple beings. It's just we get confused so easily. It's a little white wall, a little corner, a little chair, a little safe little corner here, and you sit down. So that you can manage to be fully present. Will and volition. We can see when we do practices or when we pay attention, we can see how our will and volition tend to grasp and narrow and create ruts in which we fall, in which we fight. But we also have a kind of will and volition to wake up, a will and volition to turn that into an intention or an aspiration to understand our life and to live in some large and connected way. So we do all this here with the particular body and mind we've got. Not some other one that will be some other time clearer and quieter and all those good things. The only one you've got is the perfect and only place where practice can take place. So we don't reject or deny anything. We keep opening doors to be present fully and completely here, accepting the fact that we can't even know it when it's happening, really, because the mind says, well, I'm just about here, sitting here, and I'm distracted, and boy, that's pretty lousy Zazen, and all that stuff. Well, those are the thoughts of the mind that we kindly let go of in Zazen, because we don't really need those judgments, thank you very much, right now, or any time, really. Yeah. So maybe they'll keep generating. As Uchiyama Roshi said, thoughts are the pepsin of the mind, their secretions, which natural enzymatic hormonal secretions, in fact, essentially like that. Neurons will go on firing. That's just a natural aspect of life, kind of like a byproduct in a way. Do not reject, do not deny, but no need to limit ourselves to an idea that our minds create about who we are and what we are, because it's bound to be narrow. I can only experience from this little body, and the idea I create about the world is going to be based on my limited and narrow experience. And yet somehow that's true of me. I am this body and mind and these experiences, but that's not all. This body-mind is taking place in and as the whole universe. The symbolism embedded in the precept ceremony says not only you are already present in the Dharma world and it is already here wrapping itself about you, it says you're already sufficient. It doesn't say says you don't go and become somehow sufficient to receive the Dharma. You are already sufficient. More than we know, we're sufficient. So You're already part of the Dharma world. Now let's do something about it. Let's recognize this. Let's appreciate this. Let's find ways to express that in our lives, because I'm going to be expressing myself as something larger than I know, larger, wider than I know myself to be. If I can have my personal experience acting and being in life, take that into account, living in terms of that, then I'm expressing something larger and wider. So these are two practices of awakening, like Zazen, and not only Zazen, without being sidetracked by how good or bad you are at it. Do practices, and the precept ceremony says, do practices about caring about the actions of your body, speech, and mind, and the consequences of them. Do practices of caring about your impact on others and your impact on the planet. It's your own planet, your own life, and your own self. So one of the ways that the Dharma always has tried to work to free us from the narrow me versus you, ethnocentric, narrow group-centric views that we tend to develop and then defend, has tried to say, no, this yourself is wider and bigger and deeper than you know. So this is the attitude of Dharma practice, to live in terms of being more than you think you are, to aim to live in terms of being the universe happening, of being the Dharma world. This is living in terms of the Buddha nature, that is who you are, as an individual being, not in some vague way, but as this particular personal being, to find ways to express what is universal or what is wide and deep, as well as what is particular, and to express it always in these particular ways. We don't have general actions, general words. We are specific: two arms, two legs, one fading mind, you know. Mm-hmm. With that, we act. And we try to act and live in terms of this body-mind as an expression and manifestation of the Dharma world, of the natural universe, of Buddha. So you don't have to be wise before you enter practice. And you don't have to come to some place where you see that you are yourself as wise. That's another one of those views that we can gently let go of. One day we will feel wise. That's okay. Another day we'll feel stupid. But we're equally living, manifesting our life at both times. Those are both just ideas about how we look at this moment or that moment. But there's a larger, deeper current of our life that's way bigger than our view or somebody else's view of are we wise or stupid right now. Wise practice is all that you do taking into account in some way expressing that you are deeper and wider and bigger than you know, and so is the person in front of you, and so is the air that you're breathing. I guess what the robes mean here for me is not that I'm going to get it right. Anyone who knows me for a while knows that I make all kinds of mistakes. Oh, what? We were going to do this today? Or just even interrupting or being, just doing things that are, I'd rather not. Right? But I will try. That's the commitment with this, is I will try to A, see what I'm doing, and then to open wider again to a larger view that includes and encompasses, and that also accounts for what I do and what others do. This time when we come and sit together like this is exactly that. It's that kind of precious time of it putting ourselves in a place where we are doing something larger than we know at this moment, when we either think I'm interested or I'm bored or I'm tired or I'm sleepy or I want to do the next thing or I like this or I don't like this. All those different thoughts will come racing through our minds. And they fine, they do. Little interesting epiphenomena, poop, 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 one bubble after another. Some of them are more interesting than others, maybe. But while they're all happening, big thought, little thought, serious thoughts, frivolous thought, while that's all going on, we're here, beyond our reckoning. We're taking part in our lives. So thank you very much for doing this with me.